We present My Music, a musical panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreier. And here to introduce the teams is Steve Ray.
Thank you very much. Greetings. My pleasure once again to welcome you to another edition of My Music, with the questions answered in whole or in part, but always in good humour, by Ian Wallace, working alongside Dennis Norden, versus John Amis with his partner, Frank Muir. In the first round this week, you'll hear the music of pomp, pageantry and popularity. The first three excerpts were actually recorded in the Royal Albert Hall, London. So to pomp and pageantry and popularity, we can add promenadery as well. Ian Wallace, who wrote this and for what sort of a special occasion? Wonderful part for everybody, I think,
yes,
in that particular...
But, you know, that big drum is speeding away.
Lovely.
Did I hear the word Zadok near the beginning?
Yes,
of that?
That's right. You did.
Well, it's therefore Handel.
Yeah, there aren't that many Zadoks to choose from, are there?
Well, no. That's the only Zadok in my Dorothy bag,
I must say. It wasn't Zadok Rock or Zadok Bossa Nova. No, no.
Well, you never know.
Hey, Papa Zadok.
Handel, did you say?
I said
yes,
Handel.
Thank you, that's right, yes. And the occasion, what sorts of an occasion?
This is where we come up against what they call in the common market an en passe.
It was written for the coronation of George II in 1727. It was a coronation anthem, the crowning of. Dennis, who wrote this music and who, sometime after the music, who added the words?
Well, I've had a certain amount of input, as they call it.
From Ian,
yeah. Mm. Elgar.
Yes, the music.
Wrote the music. I don't know. Do we know who wrote the words?
No, we ought to, but we don't.
We all ought to.
Whoever wrote the words were not able to get the title into the lyric, were they? It's not called Pomp and... They didn't get the word Pomp and Circumstance in, did they?
Considered very desirable in pop circles, getting the title in, that's right. We ought to know, so let's know. It was A.C. Benson, an Eton housemaster, son of an Archbishop of Canterbury, who added those words and turned it into Land of Hope and Glory. John, this is the old hundredth. Chords are like the sun coming out. John, the old hundredth what? And for what special occasion was that arrangement done? The old hundredth...
Is it the hundredth psalm?
Yes, the hundredth psalm, that's right. In fact, in America it's called the old hundred. And the special occasion?
Don't know.
Arranged by... Do you know the arrangement?
It sounded like Vaughan Williams.
Yes, Ray Vaughan Williams. Well, you don't know the occasion either, for Queen Elizabeth II's coronation, 1953. Frank, this piece was written by a composer who had the awful misfortune not to be British. Poor fellow. He wrote of it, "It will be very loud and noisy. I wrote it without any warm feelings of love, so it will probably be of no artistic worth." What piece of music do you think that might be?
rock opera Tommy.
Writing is being written.
I have a telephone number.
Yes, you have. That's right.
1812.
1812. That's your. Is that Moscow 1812? Is that?
So, yes.
Let us see if you're right.
Tchaikovsky.
You were right, the 1812 overture. John, any guess as to who the conductor might have been?
Ormandy.
Well, he'll be pleased. It was Bob Sharples.
Who was the driver?
I was a gunnery instructor on a version of that record, isn't it? I do know of one 1812 recording made some years ago in which the sound of the cannon is actually a 303 rifle fired inside a dustbin and slowed down to 16 revolutions. That's a little trick of the trade.
We did a television show with Jimmy Edwards once where he conducted that, and we had everything going at the end, everything happening to him as the conductor, including a flock of pigeons being released to settle on him. And they were trained pigeons, and they settled all over him during it. And they were brought, do you remember, they were brought from Wales, Cardiff. They were these trained pigeons. And we finished the show. It was a great effect, actually, and it all happened. And they all flew up into the roof of the television theatre after the show was over. And everybody sort of finished the show, and we were all shaking hands and going home. And I said to the train of these, I said, how do you get them back? So he said, is the roof open? We said, yes. He said, well, open the roof. They'll be home before I will.
That's charming. A sweet story.
That overture can cause demarcation union disputes over the firing of the cannon. Because in uncertain performances, this means the throwing off an electrical switch, which, of course, has to be done by a member of the electrical trade union.
Do you?
And the fact that he may not be particularly well-versed in music has got nothing to do with it at all. And in these cases, some trained musician has to stand beside the chap and give him a tap on the shoulder a split second before the cue so that he comes in right.
And the trained musician has to be in credit, too, at the time, doesn't he, with his union? We won't go any further into that. We'll move on to the next round. There's some quite odd words that one comes across when leafing through a musical encyclopedia. Ian, what is, or perhaps was, a tenor curtal?
A tenor curtal? Curtal? Oh, and I was only reminded by that limerick, the turtle.
Oh, yeah.
Was it?
In such a fix to play the tenor Kirtle.
A tenor called Kirtle who married a singer called Myrtle.
Sorry, no. I have, because it's impossible you should know, I'll give you a clue. A tenor Kirtle might have played a 16th century version of bom 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 bom.
Well, that's a bassoon that plays that.
You've got a mark. The tenor Kirtle was a 16th century forerunner of the bassoon. How clever of you, Ian, to get
that. Oh, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah.
I astonish myself occasionally.
Dennis, can you describe a giraffe?
Be careful, Dennis.
I think it was once described, if I can remember it, as an animal who has to start eating at 6 a.m. if it wants to get its breakfast in its stomach by 9 o'clock. But I presume it's some kind of musical thing with a long neck.
No, it's upright. Wouldn't call it a long neck, but it's upright as opposed to being rather grand.
Was it piano, then?
Of a kind. Let us settle for a string instrument, shall we?
All right, settle for a string instrument.
Yes, it's like a spinet.
Well, why is it called a giraffe?
Well, I think it was upright instead of being flat, you see. Anyway, a kind of upright spinet or harpsichord found in the 18th century. And for saying that, you get a mark. Saying something or other, you get a mark. Whatever it was you said, you
keep
get a mark.
Keep moving, yeah.
Keep moving, that's right. Yes. John, not long ago on this programme, while we were discussing a song, you asked me for a quint. And I gave you one, didn't I? Do you remember?
Oh,
you
think so. Give yes,
me a
you
quint.
Were in a generous mood that evening.
That's right, I felt like giving you a quint, so a quint I gave you. I played an interval of a fifth on the piano. But there seem to be two other musical definitions of a quint. Can you think of either of them?
Well, it's Peter Quint in the Turn of the Screw.
That's quite clever, yes. I think that will get you out of trouble for a start. Two technicalities. Do you happen to know?
No.
A viol with five strings would be a quint. And sometimes the upper string on a lute or even a violin is known as the quint. Good. Peter Quint gets you a mark.
I hope somebody somewhere is writing all this down, don't you?
Every prospect pleases and only the quint is viol.
Frank, if you had the misfortune to fracture your fibula, what would you do other than perhaps cry?
Musical.
Yes.
Is it an interval of music?
No, it isn't, no. Think of the word. Say the word a few times.
Is it a musical instrument or yes. Piece of same?
Yes, that's right.
It's a piece of a musical instrument?
Yes.
Is it a...
It's a musical instrument of a period type. It's
fidula.
What they called it in the 11th or 12th centuries.
Medieval? Fiddle?
Yes, that's right. You'd take it... When I said, what would you do? You'd take it to a violin maker for repair. Fidula being the...
You would never violin maker in the medieval period. You'd take it to a carpenter.
Well, you'd take it to a fidule maker, wouldn't you? Fidula. It's, of course, as you spotted, the word fiddle, Mark. Pencils and paper are out for the next round because you have to write down the titles of the six tunes that I'm going to play, or snatches of tunes. Half a mark for each one you get right, working together as teams. Team A, Ian and Dennis.
Drove us mad.
Oh, I knew. What was it? It was...
You got the first one, didn't you, Ian? Dennis?
Yes, it was the Mel Powell. My guys come back.
That's right.
The next one was All Things Come Home at Eventide.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was, but I thought that's
Who
the
mean?
Kind of song that Ian sings.
Yes. Yes. As opposed to the first one, which is not. Yes, Homing, the title. Then came...
Well, that's the one that drove us mad, yes. Isn't it? What? How did it go? Just...
In a monastery garden.
I used to
play it on my musical saw when I was young. Yes. That's right, yes, in a monastery garden. Somebody once asked me to play in the Monster's Garden. Yes, and then three more.
Three more?
Yes.
Oh. The only other one I've got written down is Shine On Harvest
That's
Moon.
That's the next one.
Oh, then there's Oh You Beautiful Doll.
That's right. And the last one?
Now, the last one.
I have nothing down.
Well, I...
It's not Someday My...
Yes.
Heart Will Awake. Away.
That's right. That's six out of six. Three marks. Very good. A medley for Team B, John and Frank. I should explain that just before I began that medley, Frank was so busy trying to ask the audience to help him that he spent all the time watching the audience instead of listening to the tunes.
And the audience were no help at all. Nothing.
So,
nothing.
First one, any
not even
ideas?
A smile of encouragement.
John, what have you got?
The first two chords were Silent Knife.
No. Peter,
yes. What do you mean, no? They were.
Well, they weren't. But they weren't the rhythm of Silent Knife.
Ah, maybe.
You didn't ask for the
why
rhythm.
Why can't be the guardian of your rubato, Steve?
Who would be?
It's not Silent Knife.
Yes, it is. Can we have a vote on it?
Yes, very well.
Right. Right, one more.
All right, then, here's the second phrase of Silent Night.
A funny way of playing it. Probably half a mark. Tune two.
It's only half a mark we play for. It was in the gloaming, as the audience knew. You know.
Studies in interpretation, yes.
Yes, the next one was...
Loch Lomond and Blue Danube.
Blue Danube. I got Blue Danube.
Right. Well, the other three, the three you missed...
And the number six was... Then called. He turned ahead, looked at me and said, Poor John.
Poor John. Good. Right. Three out of six, 1.5 marks. The other ones you didn't get were in the gloaming, of course. On Wings of Song, which was
rubbish.
The second, and Blow Away the Morning Dew. Now for a reminder of a great singer. Ian, the monk in Boris, Ford in Falstaff, the jazz band leader in Johnny Strikes Up, the rogue in the rogue song, Pinsir's successor in Fanny. Who was he?
Oh.
All those things.
That's funny. The monk in Boris, I had thought, was a bass, and Ford in Falstaff is a high baritone.
Well, perhaps that was a big range.
He must have been a very versatile singer.
You were in.
I was Pinsir's successor in Fanny.
Well, in London, but he was Pinsir's successor in New York.
Uh-huh, because there again, there's the difference between a bass and a high baritone. Ford, well, the famous... Is he an American?
Yes.
Because the famous Ford in America, in New York, in Falstaff, was Lawrence Tibbett.
Gets you a mark. Lawrence Tibbett, of whom we are speaking. Dennis, in 1929, Tibbett recorded the Toreador song from Carmen. While we listen to a few bars, can you work out why the opening line is usually translated into English as, Sirs, your toast? In other words, what's the story behind that line?
You mean is that bit? I mean, sirs, your toast.
Yes, your toast.
Really, I thought it was something terribly dramatic.
No. Well, it's up to you, isn't it?
And it's translated as sirs, your toast.
That's right. Yes.
No possibility it's a misprint.
There's always that chance.
Yeah.
Having listened to my word, I think there's a good chance that there might be a misprint. Yes.
I don't know. I can only assume it's some kind of occasion where he has to address this body of people who he's obviously in some awe of because he calls them sirs, right?
Mm. Yeah.
And if, for example, he thought they were rather... a crummy lot. He couldn't say, sirs, you're a bunch of crumbs, but he could say, sirs, you're toast.
He could. A subtle insult.
If you sing it, you see, it gains a little.
It really needs, sirs, you are toast?
Yes.
Yes, that's right. Anyway, you're right, of course, for a mark. And the other alternative possibility is that the he-men of the bullfight are toasting one another. The Toreador song. Mark to you. Mm-hmm. John, whose music and whose words?
My blessing fall on this fair world, on mountain, valley, forest, ocean.
Rather indulgent singing.
Did you get any of those words?
No, I wasn't listening, actually.
the composer.
Not a partner. Not a partner.
No.
I was just remembering that donkeys years ago, in Take It From Here, Dennis and I always used to call the singer Lawrence of Tibet.
Yes. You may have got the composer, I think, you know the song.
Sounded a bit like Tchaikovsky.
Yes, Tchaikovsky. And the chap who wrote the words, I'll only tell you one thing, he was a count. If you say Count Basie, I'll murder you.
Tolstoy.
Tolstoy. Leo Nikolaevich Tolstoy. Yes, that's right. You've got it well. It's only a mark anyway for the two. Frank, on what occasion were these words uttered, would you say? And I'll play them over to you twice.
With the very good taste, with the very good taste,
oh, the flea, oh, oh, oh,
oh. Yes,
the flea,
by Mussorgsky, yes, the song of the flea, Mark II. All the songs in the final round this week start, for no particular reason other than tidiness, perhaps with the letter I. I for Ian, or I for Novello, if you prefer a Welshman. Ian, your song comes last, and, of course, naturally, for a change of style, it's a song, please, about your bottom button. You'll be thinking about that, if you will, while I turn to Dennis. Dennis, you never seem to want my romancing. The only time you hold me is when we're dancing. It's an old-fashioned concept, isn't it? Touching while dancing. Can you remember how the song goes?
Nowadays, it's the only time they're not holding is when they're dancing.
Good line.
I think this is one where the audience could sort of rouse themselves from their apathy for a bit. you give it a touch up on the piano. Yes, not while I'm singing, because it distracts me, but when they come. I don't know.
It
only leads to trouble.
Yes, you start and I'll go on strike.
I don't know why I love you like I do. I don't know why I just do. I don't know why you thrill me like you do. I don't know why you just do. You never seem to want my romancing. The only time you hold me
is when we're dancing.
I don't know why I love you like I do. I don't know why I just do. You did very well.
Lovely. John, your mien, your tongue declare, your eyes too, that Purcell's music is everywhere. And if I start you off in G minor, the song you sing will be all the finer. Can you cope with that? In other words,
If music be the food of love, sing on, sing on, sing on, sing on, till I am filled, with joy. For then my listening soul you move, for then my listening soul you move, to pleasures that can never cloy. Your eyes, your mien, your tongue declare that you are music everywhere. Your eyes, your mien, your tongue declare that you
People occasionally ask me if these songs are rehearsed. Now they know they're not. Ian, have you managed to do your bottom button up yet? I'll come to you in a moment. Frank.
My bottom button.
No, it's not yours. It's my song. Your song is the one about Colonel Gilbert.
I'm Gilbert the...
Yes, please. Yes. Can you do that?
Have you a key?
Yes.
I'm Gilbert. The filbert, the nut with a K, the pride of Piccadilly, the grand old way. Oh, Hades, the ladies who leave their wooden huts for Gilbert the Filbert, the Colonel of the Nuts.
Ian, it's bottom button time. Right.
Once again, the programme takes a cultural change of direction. I can't do my belly bottom button up. Can't do my belly bottom button up. It's so tight, serves me right. I must have eaten too much grub last night. I can't do my belly bottom button up. And though you think it's fun, oh, what's the use of buttoning the other belly buttons with the belly bottom buttons undone? All together now! All together now! I can't do my belly button button up. Can't do my belly button button up. It's so tight, serves me right. I must have eaten too much grub last night. I can't do my belly button button up. Don't you think it's fun? Oh, what's the use of buttoning the other belly buttons when the belly button buttons undone? Hey! And marvelous, all right!
Next week, I promise you, we'll have a serious song from the end. Meanwhile, we have a victory by a large margin this week, and quite right too, for Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amos, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race and the programme was produced by Tony Schreier.